Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 11. And at the suggestion of one of our faithful listeners, and one of the things we'd like to do is we're going to preview a little bit of the AFC North here over the next 2 weeks. And with the Steelers playing the Browns in week one, we'll obviously get to that in 2 weeks on Wednesday, as we do going into every game. But we'll get the Bengals next week. We're going to talk a little Ravens this week with our buddy John Eisenberg, just kind of get a sense of where they are as a team. And Dave, I think you and I, before we get into all of this, have talked about, you know, the Ravens, a little bit of a step back. You know, you look at the career track of John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin, and they're both have been tremendously successful coaches here. But I think both you and I are on the same page here, where you look at the Ravens, particularly on the offensive side of the football, obviously, with Joe Flacco having a career playoff run that made him $1 billion, and God bless him, he bet on himself and he won big in doing that. But they've got a quarterback who's a bit of a question mark, who's not going to be usurped. He's going to be their guy for a while. And you just look and say, where are the weapons on offense, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to get some thoughts on from John Eisenberg on that very topic right there. You know, is Mike Wallace, obviously, or at least I think he had a resurgence in his career last year, a decent season. They've now lost Steve Smith. They've had quite a few injuries, not only to the offensive line, but several other key positions during the offseason. They're not going to have they don't have Dennis Pitta anymore. You have to wonder who their, you know, is Max Williams, you know, the former second round pick, going to be able to handle the workload at tight end. So yeah, they've got a lot of questions, especially not so much on the defensive side of the ball, because I think they're going to be a fairly strong defense once again, something we've come to, you know, really expect from the Ravens. I think the special teams are in good shape, and how could they not be with a guy like Justin Tucker and Sam Cook, the punter. I saw a preseason game a few weeks ago. He looks to be in fine form already, so they should be out fine on special teams and defense. The question is, with the Ravens, is how's this offense going to do, and is that back issue with Flacco something to really be concerned about?
Yeah, you mentioned the injuries, guys retiring. I mean, Orr retires. I mean, he came back, and then he made his decision final again this week at age 25, John Urschel. We know the story about him when the CTE study came out just a day later. He walks away, the former Penn State lineman who was battling at this point for the starting center job. You mentioned that some of the Kenneth Dixon, the running backs, out for the year. We've not seen Rashad Perriman really kind of take a step forward. Jeremy Maclin, they're relying on a guy who's had some interesting things happen to his career the past few years. So yeah, I'm with you. Look, they always play the Steelers tough. Guys like Danny Woodhead, I always think are, you know, some of the more valuable guys in the league who are very underrated. But it is going to be interesting to see what happens. And, I think we talked about this a month ago, and both of us look at the Bengals as kind of the strong challenger, if there is one, for the Steelers for the division. The Browns will take a step forward, obviously, from where they were. They've added a lot of talent, but there's still big questions at quarterback, and that's a team. The question's more, are they going to win 4 or 6 games rather than are they going to contend for the division title? The Ravens are a bit of a wild card, so we'll see where that goes. Let's get into the Steelers. And, you know, Dave, I asked you at the end of the podcast on Monday about the injury situation and what we expected to see in terms of this week. And we got a little bit more clarity from Mike and where things were. The Steelers released some information about, you know, who's currently out. And I think, you know, they only released four names of guys who are currently, you know, not at the time, not expected to play as of Saturday. And Pouncey was on that list. But to me, the two most interesting names on the list, you know, obviously Le'Veon Bell was on the list. We'll get to him in a minute. But the two more interesting names were Landry Jones and DeMarcus Ayers. First of all, DeMarcus Ayers, man, talk about shooting yourself in the foot. I mean, it's the Sanquez Golson situation on the other side of the ball. I mean, he's just not going to make the team. And he, for you know, everybody out there saw him play a little bit and run out of the slot and do some other things in the last 5 weeks of the season last year. You realize this guy's – look, he's not going to be a guy you build your offense around. But he had – showed some elusiveness. He showed some skills. And I think he's a guy who can play in the NFL. But, again, if you don't get a chance to get on the field in the preseason, you don't get to play in the NFL.
Yeah, and, you know, that list that you're talking about, that was only the offensive players that Missy Matthews tweeted out. There was in total eight players.
Right, right. She didn't get into Colson and Sutton's.
Right. Landry Jones, DeMarcus Ayers, Le'Veon Bell, Marquise Pouncey, Cameron Sutton, Mike Mitchell, Sanquez Golson, and Keon Adams. We'll talk a little bit more about Keon Adams here in a minute here. But with DeMarcus Ayers, look, I mean, his ticket to this 53 this year was going to be primarily him showing that he could return punts. And now you have to even wonder if he's behind, the young running back at this point, at, you know, Trey Williams, after that game the other day against the Falcons. And it doesn't, you know, barring Ayers practicing, you know, Wednesday and Thursday, which, you know, I'd hold my breath about that happening. It doesn't look like he's going to play in the third preseason game. So he'll essentially more than likely have one preseason game remaining to at least even make a claim at a potential practice squad spot. And, you know, there's a lot of decent, you know, wide receivers probably that are not going to make this team. Guys like Kobe Hamilton, guys like Marcus Tucker, that you have to wonder, you know, who's going to be worth keeping, assuming that the Steelers only keep one wide receiver on their practice squad. So, DeMarcus Ayers, and we really, I don't think, know what that injury is. Is it a foot issue with him? Is it a shoulder issue? I don't think we really know for sure. And like I said, I don't think he's going to play. It'd be interesting to see if Landry Jones is able to get some time in his third preseason game coming off of that, you know, still hasn't played since suffering that abdominal injury early on in camp. Marquise Pouncey with reportedly that leg gash, if you will, is the last report on him. Sutton, it'll be interesting to see if he gets some practice time in this week. It'd be nice to see him play in the final two preseason games. Mike Mitchell, we don't expect him to play. Cinquez Goldson, we don't expect him to play. And Keon Adams, we definitely don't expect him to play either. And then there's guys like Ramon Foster, who reportedly missed this game against the Falcons as he was in concussion protocol. He's reportedly out of that now. Bud Dupree looks like he might play. Javon Hargrave said, I believe yesterday or Monday, that he did not have a concussion, but that he was still on protocol. So it'll be interesting to see if he plays as well, too. So a lot to look forward to. You know, the third preseason game is obviously kind of regarded as the tune-up game, and you certainly would like to have as many starters out there as possible for as long as possible on top of it. And boy, when you look at that defense, it sure would be nice to get guys like Shazier and Bud Dupree out there at least for a handful of snaps.
Yep. And just to we got an email from one of our loyal listeners, Bill, and he said, you know, if he was out of time, as you guys say, why is he still around now talking about Cinquez Golson? And he suggests that if they knew something was bad and happened, that he thinks that means he's safe on the roster. Well, Bill, the deal is here, you get 90 spots, and if it were a long snapper or punter or, you know, Houston at quarterback, or maybe an outside linebacker, you would fill the spot with another guy and make a roster move. But keeping Cinquez Golson around has nothing to do with what his long-term prospects are to actually make the roster. They're keeping them around because they got 90 spots, and there's no they don't have to create a roster spot for him. So it doesn't say anything about his, you know, safetiness, quote unquote, of being on the roster. I mean, I would say it's a lock to right now that Senquez Golson is, and I've been in his corner and I've been advocating for him and you know, from the get go, from the day he's been drafted. But I'd say it's a lock. He's not making the 53. If he's not on the practice field today, I would say it's, you know, it's a virtual lock. He's not even going to get to the practice squad. I mean, it'd be 3 years in a row the guy never took a snap and saw the practice field. So he has zero chance unless he practices today and tomorrow and sees half the game on Saturday and does something of substance to kind of raise eyebrows. I mean, look, he's high pedigree. He's a guy I've wanted to see. But if you're not on the field for 3 years, you can't make the team, period. End of story.
Yeah, and plus he's injured right now as well, Bill. So, you know, you would have, if you did cut ties with him, you had to waive him injured. And then, you know, potentially, you know, he would revert back to your IR. And then you absolutely have, you know, no chance with him. So, you know, why not? You've given him this long. Why not give him an extra week and another 2 weeks here just to see, you know, what can happen there. But I'm with you, and I've been thinking this for a while now there is no way you can justify him at this moment making the 53. And several people have either on Twitter or I think even one or two in email said, well, what about Senquez as a practice squad guy? Well, first he's got to get healthy. And then a guy that's had the injury concerns that, you know, injury problems that he's had. Do you really want a guy on your practice squad not knowing, you know, if he's going to be able to stay healthy? So, you know, we'll see. If Brian Allen, rookie Brian Allen, ultimately doesn't make this team, you're probably going to try to get him to the practice squad. You only have 10 practice squad spots to work with, and if you keep six corners in total on your 53-man roster, how many are you really realistically going to keep on your practice squad as well? And if you assume Allen's one of them and that they're not going to keep more than one, you know, Senquez has to go. And I understand, you know, the biggest fear, it seems right now, with fans in regard to Golson is that it'll end up somewhere else and become a star. But, you know,
good for him.
Yeah, good for him if he does. And y'all be rooting for him. You know, it's a shame that we have not seen him play in 3 years now. And on top of it, I keep going back to this. How many players, you know, across the NFL in the last, let's say, 10 years have come out of college and not played in a single preseason game that have turned around to end up on 53-man rosters? And not only that, be you know, key contributors.
Yeah, and just to make a close the loop on Golson, for those who don't remember or, you know, hearing Mike Hilton's name, haven't put it all together, Mike Hilton was in the defensive backfield at Ole Miss with Senquez Golson. They were there together. And the Steelers, you know, drafted Senquez Golson as a second-round pick. Mike Hilton went as a UDFA. But Mike Hilton's on the field and in practice every day, and he's obviously made an impression to the coaches, to fans, to the media. We saw what he did. He got a get the pressure on that blitz that led to what I still think should have been called a safety on the play in the game this past weekend. So, you know, the difference is he's out there. Look, he's an undersized guy too. He's 5'9". They're very. I mean, it would have been interesting to watch that Ole Miss defensive backfield play a few years ago. You know, Hilton's 5'9", and Golson's, you know, about the same size. They had two undersized guys there, but obviously Hilton's shown that he has a level of talent and Golson was a second round pick. So they were doing some things right in the backfield. The difference is one guy's playing and one guy isn't. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. All right. So Le'Veon Bell, he decided to tweet that basically as soon as the preseason games are over, I'll come into camp yesterday. Didn't say it quite like that, just put a date on it, Dave, but it was the day after the Carolina game next week when he'll show up. None of this is surprising. I assume that he's not, you know, joking around with that. That would be the perfect day if I were him to show up. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and you know the thing is, and Ben Roethlisberger reportedly talked about that this morning, and I think last week during a radio interview, that you know the biggest issue with him is getting in football shape as quick as possible and learning the.
Let me just interrupt and ask you: are you concerned about it?
Man, I would have liked him to have at least one, you know, 2 full weeks of practice and get bounced around a few times. But in the grand scheme of things, if you watch,
so he's going to get 1 full week of practice because he's going to come in Friday. He's going to get the full week leading up to Cleveland.
Yeah, and you know, if you watch his workout videos and all, and what he does down there at Bomarito Performance System, he keeps himself in it. It's not like he's loafing around. So, you know,
my concern zero, as I said the other day, I would I'm not worried about him getting hit. People talk about he gets hit too much. Now they're worried about him not getting hit enough.
Yeah. The only thing I worry about is the old hamstring, David, you know, that would be it, you know, just from you know, not, you know, doing some of those things on the practice field there. So, you know, overall, no, I'm not worried about it. You know, as long as he gets in and gets a good first. Here's the thing. How many snaps will he play in the opener?
Well, right. So do you think he gets less run? Look, James Conner didn't do a thing in the preseason, and he was able to carry the ball 20 times against the Falcons. Why can't Le'Veon Bell come in and carry the ball 20 times and catch 5 passes against the Browns? There's absolutely no reason. James Conner hadn't been doing it, and he was able to do it in a preseason game. Why can't Le'Veon Bell do it in a regular season game? It just there's no logic to the conversation that even Mike Tomlin brings to the table or Ben brings to the table about it. They're willing to do it with James Conner. Why can't they do it with Le'Veon Bell?
Yeah, and like I said, my biggest fear would only be kind of a hamstring type situation there. I mean, Le'Veon Bell has the experience of knowing what it takes to have your body in the proper
condition. To be in the league.
You know, whereas James Conner, you know, first, you know, obviously a rookie and finding out what's involved in that process and all. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, if you did take Le'Veon Bell off the field, who are you going to put on the field to take his place? You know, are you at the point where you 100% trust James Conner right now with the protections and some of the little things outside of just running, you know, between the guards? You know, that's another thing that we really don't know. And you know, and that's a huge factor. And Niall Davis and Fitzgerald Toussaint really haven't, you know, stuck out. I mean, you could put Toussaint in there and probably not worry about pass protection, and probably the same, you know, potentially the same thing with Niall Davis. So, you know, you're probably going to have to lean on Le'Veon Bell quite a bit, whether you like it or not there, because you don't have a guy like D'Angelo Williams to fall back on like they did the last two seasons here.
Let me ask you something. Let's just make a hypothetical. We won't say he got injured or whatever. Le'Veon Bell, for whatever reason, let's just do a hypothetical. He can't play against the Cleveland Browns. Is the starting running back Fitz Toussaint? Is it Niall Davis? Is it James Conner? Who do you think the Steelers would turn to and say, you know, you're going to get the bulk of the carries today?
Wow, that's a great question, right? Because we don't even know if Davis or who we can't bet our houses right now on Davis or Toussaint, right?
Yeah, no, you can't bet your houses on being on the team. Although, as I said Monday, I think they both will end up being on the team. But yeah, I mean, is it possible that just hypothetically, and again, you know, our listeners can chime in here. Is it possible that it would be James Conner?
I think things that we don't know, assuming his understanding of the offense is there, I would be okay with James Conner being out there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I would too. I mean, look, just look at the game, watching him play in college. I mean, they handed it to him 20 times, and they handed it to him 20 times against the Falcons for a reason. To figure that out. And it's going to be interesting in this next game to see if Fitz gets 10 carries or Niall Davis gets 10 carries. I mean, if they hand it to James Conner 20 more times, well, that's going to tell you something.
who do you, I mean, if you're Mike Tomlin and Todd Haley right now, you already know who Fitz and Nile Davis are, though, don't you? So why wouldn't you?
I think you know who Fitz is. I'm with you a little bit. I'd like to see some of Nile Davis. I'd like to see some more of that.
Yeah, personally, I'd like to see James Conner get 20 more attempts and, you know, five targets in the passing game to learn a little bit more about him, because if you started Toussaint Nile Davis or Nile Davis, you know, what are the realistic expectations there? You know, I think James Conner gives you the better chance of some 10 to 20 yard plays, you know? And
yes, I agree with that.
You go back to, you know, not, you know, we can no longer really point to, you know, point to what he did at Pitt and stomp our feet on it. But boy, he sure did have a lot of explosive plays at Pitt. And that's exciting, which is really, when you look at Le'Veon Bell, what's the one knock that we keep talking about Le'Veon Bell all this time? It's the fact that, you know, he doesn't deliver explosive runs.
Right. I mean, as when we say that, it's you know, a lot of 8 to 15 yard runs and doesn't take it to the house 60 yards often. But you know, if you're gonna average 4.5 yards a carry, I think everybody will sign up for that.
Or if you average 7 or 8 yards per touch,
you know, right?
That's it's hard to, you know. And no, I'm not trying to discount anything. I'm just saying that, you know, if there's the one knock on Le'Veon Bell, it's the fact that he doesn't deliver explosive runs. But boy, does he sure make up with it, you know, out of the backfield as a pass catcher. And as you said, those 7 to 12 yard runs add up as well too.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Where do we go from here? What do we got? You know, as we said, Ben's commented here on Le'Veon Bell. He said all the things you would expect him to say. We'd like to have him here. You know, there's some wrinkles in the offense. He's going to have to pick him up, blah, blah, blah. Again, James Conner can pick him up. Le'Veon Bell can pick him up. So it's a non-factor. The guys get asked questions. Teammates are tired of answering Le'Veon Bell questions, blah, blah, blah. He's going to be back. He's going to be in great shape. I mean, you know, the hamstring issue that you bring up, we talk about this every year. It's guys come in, they come in late, and if any guy gets injured, they point to the fact that, you know, he wasn't there the whole time. But the guy coming in is no different than the guys who were starting from day one. So, you know, he's not sitting on his ass, you know, eating Cheetos. He's been running, he's been working out. I'm not gonna put any injury on the fact that he hasn't been around. There's nothing more for me to add. I've made it very clear. I don't think it makes any difference that he hasn't been there.
As far as the new wrinkles goes, I bet he knows how to run that counter. I bet he knows how to run that 14 straight.
He knows how to hesitate in the hole.
I bet he knows how to run that 22 double. I bet he knows how to run that choice route, out of the backfield. So, okay, if he doesn't get all those wrinkles in week one, I'm sure there's a whole slew of other old plays that he can run as well too. So, you know, look, the good news is that it appears that he's going to come in, appears that he's going to be ready to go for the first game and against a, you know, an improving Cleveland defense, I think, but a defense just the same that just lost one of their starting their middle linebacker there. There's questions whether or not Danny Shelton will be ready for the season opener. So even if Le'Veon Bell is 80% Le'Veon Bell, the rest of that offense should be able to pick things up there. Okay, moving on along. Keon Adams, you know, we talked in that last podcast, I think, about me saying, I don't know, you know, that shoulder injury possibly a concern there. Maybe he ends up on IR. Well, we had a source tell us yesterday that Adams is going to need shoulder surgery and will be ultimately placed on IR. So there you go. Seventh round draft pick this year. Obviously hasn't played in any of the preseason games. Doesn't look like, you know, if this report, if the sources are correct, that he's not going to play in either of the final two. Now the question becomes, and I don't know, you know, with this new cut down rule, David, from going from 90 to 53 instead of 90 to 75, if the rule changed about, you know, IR typically opens up after the third preseason game. And, you know, we saw this last year, you know, you don't have to waive guys to get them to IR after that third preseason game. We saw that last year with Gerald Hawkins, you know, so it'll be interesting to see if after this third preseason game, that's what happens to Adams, or if the rules change that they have to carry him all the way through the final round of cuts there. And, you know, assuming this shoulder injury is long-term and rehab's going to be long-term, you know, probably not going to be a candidate for IR to return, because
he has zero chance of that. He's IR. Just get him on IR. He hasn't practiced at all. We've been talking about 10 linebackers, he's not been in the conversation. The only reason he's in the conversation is he was a sixth-round pick. Just put him on IR, and we'll see you next year.
Right, and, you know, the other issue is, even if you wanted to possibly make him a candidate to be one of the two players later in the year that can return from IR, he would have to be on the initial 53-man roster. So that creates another issue there with a guy that, like you said, hasn't played any. So
right. There's no way. There's no chance they carry him to the 53.
Agreed. So, you know, it's unfortunate. I really thought going into training camp this year that Adams would be a guy that could maybe push a guy like Arthur Motes. But, you know, that never materialized. And it's a shame we didn't get to see any of them, you know, during the preseason. And now we'll just keep our fingers crossed that he can get healthy and see him the same time next year. So at least that solves that problem. And on top of it, his unfortunate potential bad news is probably good news for a guy like Farrington Hugonen. You know, now he becomes a guy that probably going to get a practice squad spot, assuming they keep one outside linebacker there. So some of these dominoes appear to be kind of falling into place here when it comes to these later round draft picks such as Adams, and we'll see what ultimately happens with Brian Allen as well.
Okay. Anything else on the Steeler front?
I took an extended look at the pass attempts by Joshua Dobbs, the other night against the Falcons there.
I'm guessing you have to be, other than somebody who's actually getting paid by the Steelers right now, between the work you did on in the offseason on every pass he threw at Tennessee. I think you've seen more of Josh Dobbs' passes than Josh Dobbs has seen. I mean, it's unbelievable. So have you seen anything to be – look, I'm not here to pan Josh Dobbs or pan the pick. And, you know, I didn't love it, whatever. We've talked about that enough. Have you seen anything that's encouraging?
This is going to sound cliche, but we see a lot of the same Josh Dobbs that we saw last year at Tennessee so far with the Steelers. I think the biggest takeaway, he's obviously had to learn how to get a team in and out of the huddle. You remember they really didn't do that at Tennessee, and nearly every snap that he took was out of shotgun, and plus it was the old hand clap. You know, boy, he had a loud hand clap too, to signal the snap and all. But it's going to sound cliche, but we're seeing a lot of things out of Joshua Dobbs with the Steelers so far in two preseason games that we saw at Tennessee. Accuracy issues on some of the shorter passes. A guy that can get it out there, has the arm to get it out there. I've been impressed with his pocket presence. And all ability to feel pressure and then step up into the pocket. What else is there? You know, obviously you don't like to see him try to force things like he did on that final interception against the Falcons, just trying to make a play and flipping it out there. And by the way, I was kind of wanting him back in the game at least one more series after that. I mean, I understand enough is enough. You want to get a look at Bart Houston there. But I would have liked to seen him come in after, you know, that adversity of that play and play at least one more series there. But, yeah, I did watch every snap of his from Tennessee last year, and I've seen every snap of his in preseason, obviously, this year. The deep throws that he threw against the Falcons, we don't know for sure if they were intended to be all back shoulder throws. It appears as though that was the intention, and if so, well, then they were seemingly on the money. Now, several of those balls were contested, you know, and one drew a flag on the left side to DHB, and, you know, some might say that Martavis mistimed maybe a or had a bad adjustment on one later in the game. Martavis obviously adjusted nicely on that first long one that he caught there. But I don't think we've learned a lot about Joshua Dobbs other than the fact that, you know, confirming a lot of the things that he did at Tennessee, and he still needs some development, if you will. And, you know, there were three passes in this game against the Falcons that were flat-out dropped, two by James Conner, one by Xavier Grimble. So it's important to keep those in mind when you just look at his flat-out stat line.
I'm chuckling because as we're talking about Dobbs, I'm looking at some Twitter comments about Bell. Somebody said they should cut him on principle to make a point, and then somebody else said because if he doesn't know the new wrinkles in the playbooks, it could be dangerous starting him despite his talent. Good God, folks! Good God, come! If you don't know the new wrinkles, use the old wrinkles. I mean, come on.
I had one person last night tweet me and say, I hope he gets injured, or I hope he blows out a knee.
I saw you respond to that.
Folks, you know, sometimes it's hard. I realize the fandom sometimes takes over and the emotion takes over. And look, I mean, yeah, there are reports out there that Bell was turned down this, turned down that. And even though I don't agree with his motives of holding out like he did when there was, you know, essentially the only thing to be gained was not showing up at Latrobe and assuring himself that he wouldn't play in all four preseason games. This is a business, you know. He's obviously got his reasons for doing what he did. And, you know, there's currently no reason to think he's not going to be the same Le'Veon Bell that he was last year there. So, you know, as soon as he puts up 180 total all-purpose yards in a game, how quickly a lot of this stuff will likely go away.
Yeah, which will be week one. So to get back to Josh Dobbs, let me ask you this, because Landry Jones, through no fault of his own and through maybe some fault of ours, got his ass kicked and has never been embraced by the fan base because of when he was taken, just strictly when he was taken and the year he was taken. There didn't seem to be a need to be taking a quarterback, and they took Landry Jones, and neither of us liked the pick, and we've talked about it, and he didn't look good. That was his own fault. The first two preseasons, he looked terrible. This past year, he looked significantly improved. He signs a two-year deal. We haven't seen him. Josh Dobbs isn't wearing any of that. Because, you know, some of it Ben's comments, some of it because of Landry Jones' performance, whatever it is, he's not wearing any of that. Is there any reason to be more encouraged about Josh Dobbs today than Landry Jones when he was drafted?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I think Joshua Dobbs was a better quarterback coming out of college than Landry Jones, you know, was.
You do. Now, I mean, because the numbers wouldn't – I mean, look, they obviously played in slightly different offenses, but they both played in spreads. And Landry Jones had a pretty damn productive career at Oklahoma, but, you know, he was doing pretty simple stuff. And, you know, you're much more the expert on Joshua Dobbs and what he was doing in college than I am. I mean, you've got a much 10-to-1 feel on that to me. But He wasn't a more productive quarterback, but was he the more sophisticated quarterback?
I think he has a little bit more pocket presence coming out. You know, I think
that's fair. That's fair because they both were running the shotgun all the time, but Landry was just read and throw.
Right, and another thing about Dobbs is when you look at his stats and his completion percentage, and it tells you one thing, but when you go back through that tape, especially through his senior, his final year, man, he didn't get a lot of help from his wide receivers, David. I think go back and look at that series of posts that I did, a lot of drops that he had, how much does a rocket scientist and being a smarter quarterback play into it? I mean, obviously we don't know the answer to that, but I just got to feel after, and look, I didn't know I didn't know a lot about Joshua Dobbs until after the Steelers drafted him. That's when I really dove a lot deeper into his tape and, obviously has his warts, but I felt better about the Dobbs pick after going extensively through his tape, more so than I did several years ago. After exploring Landry Jones, however common now, thanks to YouTube nowadays and us having access to more games and all, I obviously watched more tape on Dobbs this year than I did on Jones way back several years ago, if that makes sense. I mean,
yeah. Let me ask you a question. So Landry Jones is entering year five? For what year is he entering? Five?
No, his rookie contract expired, right? And then he signed a 2-year deal.
So this would be year five. His 4-year deal. He had four. Right, he's been with the Steelers 4 years. Is that right?
Right, right. He was he was drafted in 2013, 13, 14, 15, 16. This is his fifth year.
Yeah, year five. So he's entering year five. Will Josh Dobbs entering his fifth year have played as much football in the NFL as Landry Jones?
Yeah, didn't we kind of talk about this about the starts and all like that? Landry has four or five starts and
four starts, yeah.
It all goes back to is Ben Roethlisberger going to play out the rest of his contract, and obviously if Ben's around and stays,
so we assume he gets zero starts this year, right? I mean that's the obvious assumption, right?
Right.
Yeah, and then after that, who knows? I guess I'm guessing Landry Jones has played. He started four games. That Cleveland game he started, and obviously he was out quickly. He's come in and against the Cardinals. He's come in other games against Seattle and played a bit. I'm guessing if you just took four whole games and just assumed kind of 75 offensive snaps, I'm guessing Landry Jones has played, roughly you'd add a little bit above that number. So let's say 350 offensive snaps. I wonder if Josh Dobbs, when he finishes his rookie contract, will have played 350 snaps in the NFL. We'd just be throwing a dart at the dartboard, but that'd be interesting. That's an interesting number to think about, because he hadn't done anything to impress, and you hope he doesn't get on the field this year. But who knows how it goes down the road.
And here's the thing: in these first two preseason games, you see him. You see them only asking him to do kind of limited stuff. He had the four or five deep balls down the sideline in that game, all assumingly back shoulder throws. That's dangerous to do. A couple of slants, one to a couple on each side, I think. Two to Justin Hunter, one he overthrew to the left side, one he was on the money to Justin Hunter on the right side, one to DHB on a slant that he threw low, and I think another one to the left side to Sammy Coates that I think he caught. We see a lot of we saw him do a couple of the tight end several times, kind of the tight end flare outs to Jesse James. We've seen him throw a couple of short sit-down routes, I think one to David Johnson in this game this past week. And then, obviously, we've seen a couple of running back screens. So it's not like they're asking – Joshua Dobbs to do a whole lot. I think they just want to get him comfortable, make sure he has the basics down. And yeah, there's no reason to put him ahead of Landry Jones right now, even though we haven't even seen Landry Jones on the field so far this preseason. And to me, there's no reason to think at any point this season that Dobbs will overtake Landry Jones for that.
No, he's not going to. He's not going to step in front of him in practice. So that's a done deal.
Right, barring injury, it appears as though this depth chart is what it's been all offseason and will remain that way.
Yeah. All right, Dave. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back and have our man John Eisenberger talk a little bit Baltimore Ravens. Okay, welcome back. It's Wednesday, and as we mentioned, we're going to do a little preview here in the preseason of the Ravens and the Bengals next week as the Steelers open with the Browns, and we'll get to them on the season opener. But as always, when we talk Ravens, we're pleased to be joined by John Eisenberg, who you can find at Bmore Eisenberg, and you can at BaltimoreRavens.com, covers the Ravens on a daily basis. Check out his latest book. If you're a baseball fan, it's called The Streak, Lou Gehrig, Cal Ripken, and baseball's most historic record. It was published July 4th this year. It's brand new. Fantastic stuff. John always does great work. And, of course, being there in Baltimore, the connection to all of that. John, as always, thanks for being with us here on the Terrible Podcast.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure. I always enjoy being with you guys.
So tell us, you gave us a little tidbit here that probably most Steelers fans, I didn't know. The Ravens, the Steelers, we wax poetic about them going up to St. Vincent College in La Trobe and having this very bonding experience. It's been 52 years, you know, the whole thing. And the Rooneys have done such a great thing for that college, and the fans get to have the experience. Very different situation going on for the Ravens this year, apparently.
Well, they moved. They had the similar sort of bonding experience for years, actually going back to when the Colts were here, practiced at Western Maryland College, which is now McDaniel College in Westminster, Maryland, about an hour outside Baltimore. And actually, Steve Bisciotti, the owner of the Ravens, he grew up going out there. All football fans did. But in 2011, they ended that relationship. And there's been a lot of, the fans, of course, are not happy with it. They moved to the training camp to their facility in Owings Mills. They had a state-of-the-art facility, still do. And so this year, that facility is under construction. They're doing a major renovation, almost $50 million. And it's a construction site. So there are no fans at training camp this year, zero. So the upgrade is more parking and seating for fans to come in the coming years. But this year, there's nobody.
That has to be an odd experience, and I'm sure that's tough on the fans, but let's talk about what's been going on in the last 9 months for the Colts, because, you know, the Steelers, you get a little bit of the drama headlines with Ben, is he going to retire or not? And you get Le'Veon Bell not around, and when's Martavis Bryant going to be reinstated? But my goodness, those pale in comparison to the headlines with the Ravens, because good God, between retiring and injuries, it has been a rough offseason for the Ravens.
Yeah, definitely. Of course, the biggest one being Zach Orr, who was their leading tackler 2016. And this is old news at this point. It was in January, I think. He's a 24-year-old kid, and he had an injury, and they were x-raying it, or diagnosing, and they came across, the team doctors came across this rare condition, a cervical condition. And they said, we cannot pass you a physical anymore or retired. And he briefly tried to come back this summer, but has announced that he is done for good. So that's the leading tackler from last year. It was just a shock, 24-year-old, really rising star. So that was rough. John Urschel, the center, likely they had traded Jeremy Zuda, their starting center. John Urschel was probably going to be the starting center. He retired when training camp began. He's probably the smartest guy in the NFL by a mile, and he's in graduate school at MIT. He's getting his PhD at MIT, and he just, he had a concussion last year, and I think he felt like you know, that's one brain that he didn't want to mess with. And he's at MIT was more exciting for him. So he's done with football. So those, and there's been so many injuries in training camp. Joe Flacco hasn't practiced one day in training camp because of a back injury. He will start the regular season. So it's been one thing after the other for the Ravens. Pretty tumultuous offseason.
Before we move any further, John, you being in Baltimore, none of this injury bug is contagious, right? I mean, we can't get this over over the line here because, my goodness.
You better watch it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Steelers, knock on wood, have had a decent preseason so far in training camp when it comes to, you know, serious long-term injuries. All joking aside, when it comes to Flacco and his back issue, you know, I've read all the reports and all, but I mean, is there any concern there, do you think, of him, you know, getting into the season and this becoming an issue for him with that back?
Well, I mean, there's always concern with a back injury. It is different. This is not a structural injury. The Ravens have not exactly been explicit in what it is, other than the fact that it is not a structural injury and they expect him to start the regular season opener and that they've held him out of the preseason more as a precaution than anything. So we'll see. I mean, Flacco has been, as you all know, very durable, you know, play through anything. The only games he's missed in his career is when he tore up his knee, he missed six games. So you're just used to having him there, but now he's 32 years old and we'll see. I mean, you know, my sort of instinct on it is that he certainly will be ready to go for that season opener in Cincinnati. How well he'll play, though, is really the larger question. I mean, he was there for all the spring practices, the OTAs, the mandatory minicamp, everything. So he went through all that. This is something that happened between that minicamp and the start of training camp. So he's missed all of training camp. Can you go? And it's a fair question. Can you just go from 0 to 60 on opening day and be a winning quarterback? I mean, he's a veteran. He's done it. You like to think he could, but if he doesn't play well, I think we'll know why.
When you've obviously covered this team for quite a while, and you know, when generally you could count on the Ravens' offense, you know, holding up their end of the bargain. Now, assuming Flacco stays healthy, we'll still probably see the same old Joe Flacco. But, you know, when you look at his weapons this year, and I saw NFL Network try to, you know, tease, you know, our Breshad Perriman, Mike Wallace, and Jeremy Maclin, you know, the league's top, you know, trio in the league. And I got a chuckle out of that, all things considered. Now, Mike Wallace, I think, surprised a lot of people last year in his first season there in Baltimore, did some good things, obviously burned the Steelers in that first game between the two teams. But when you look at a guy like Breshad Perriman, who's still struggling to get, you know, stay on the field, and a guy like Jeremy Maclin, who, while he has had his successes in the league, most notably with the Chiefs, got to be a lot of question marks there when it comes to that offense, not only at the wide receiver position, but a few of these offensive line spots and then tight end as well, too. Can Max Williams start playing and stay on the field like a second-round draft pick supposed to?
Many, many questions on the offense, including those ones you've touched on. The wide receiving core, they feel pretty good about I feel like Wallace and Maclin will be a decent 1-2 veteran guys. I mean, Macklin's coming off a bad year in Kansas City. It turned out he had a torn muscle that he played with, and that was part of the reason. And so they feel like they kind of stole Maclin. They feel like he's going to be decent for them. Perriman, of course, has just had one injury after the other. It's a hamstring. And he's a young guy with explosive potential, but he's just been hurt so much. And he's still pretty green. But he's a guy with upside, but when he's not on the field, it's hard to see that upside. And they just had just one injury after the other, the tight end position you alluded to. I think the starter is Nick Boyle, who was a fifth-round draft pick a few years ago. A big, rugged kid. They really like him. He's a great blocker. And, they want to run the ball more this year in Baltimore. Really have gotten away from that. And so he will be part of that. I think the backup is Ben Watson, the oldest player on the team, 37 years old. And Max Williams, who you mentioned, is the X factor. He's coming off this. He's a second-round pick, a talented kid with some good hands. He has bulked up, but he's coming off a serious knee surgery, a sort of a experimental surgery that they did. It's a little mysterious, and I don't really know all the details. And he's had a quiet camp, but he has bulked up, and he's on the field. And the preseason game against Miami last week, he made a couple of big plays. I think he's got some upside there. So, I mean, they've just lost. Of course, they lost Dennis Pitta. You know, you're talking about another. He hasn't officially retired, but that's a name we didn't even mention. He got hurt in a. I mean, it was his third hip injury. His career is over. So, you know, that's Flacco's favorite receiver. So he went down. So, and then the issue of the moment right now is the offensive line. There is so many injuries and retirements and defections. They do have the potential of rolling out a decent offensive line on the opening day. Marshall Yanda will be there. But Ronnie Stanley, who is a pretty good young left tackle, has a soft tissue injury, has not been playing. And I don't know whether the center will be Jeremy Zuda or Ryan Jensen. Alex Lewis, who was left guard, he's out for the year. So lots of issues.
John, just kind of, you know, coming back to 30,000 feet, we talk about, you know, the strength on the defensive side of the ball, really, and the questions on the offensive side of the ball. That's kind of where we are with this team. And, you know, we know what a great coach John Harbaugh is. We know what a great executive Ozzie Newsome has been. You know, they've had a little bit of a lean time here. And you look at it, and for us in Pittsburgh, you know, the woe is us in Pittsburgh is, wow, the Patriots are still better than the Steelers. And every time they play each other, Tom Brady picks apart the Steelers secondary and the coaching staff hasn't figured it out. They can't do it. And they're still not going to be Super Bowl champions because the Patriots are better. What are they saying in Baltimore right now? And what's your perspective and maybe the fan base's perspective and how they look at the division?
I think, you know, the eyebrows are up a little, you know, it's kind of show us what you've got, I think would be sort of the attitude here. Because as you mentioned, 3 out of the last 4 years, this team has not been in the playoffs and, they're used to better, plain and simple here. And, I mean, the one thing they have done is they've beaten the Steelers a fair amount, but, you know, those are sort of hollow victories when they don't end up, you know, taking you to the playoffs. So, and of course, last season they lost to the Steelers and knocked them out. So they're not even doing that. But I think what they have done, they did enter this offseason with a sort of a plan to sort of get back to the basics. The defense, you know, I had pretty good ratings last year, but it was
3/4 of the year fantastic, right? Right. I mean, the run defense was unbelievable.
Yeah, but there were games that gave up leads. The secondary would give up key leads, and certainly that game in Pittsburgh, the defense couldn't stop them in the fourth quarter with the game and the season on the line. So they have really fortified the defense. I mean, they went out and got Tony Jefferson a safety. They got Brandon Carr a cornerback. Their first round draft pick Marlon Humphrey was a cornerback. They drafted a second round pick Tyus Bowser, a 3-down linebacker probably. In the long run, they have, and they've been doing that for a couple of years, and sort of that's sort of bearing fruit this year. They got just a bunch of young defensive players with that mix of veterans and some of those free agent signings. It's a real good defense, I think. It's the best defense I've seen in a while here. So they have decided, they went into this season saying, we're going to have a better defense, and, you know, we're going to run the ball more because – they really have gotten away from that, and it's been a problem, you know, for Flacco. That was a franchise record for pass attempts last year, and that's just not the Baltimore Ravens. So they're trying to get back to their basics this year. The defense, I think they've achieved it. I think that's going to be a good defense this year. The offense, though, so many setbacks that it's a little hard to see how that's going to come into focus yet.
A lot of these draft picks you already hit on, but I wanted to ask a little bit more because I studied quite a few of these guys during the pre-draft process, most notably Marlon Humphrey, Tyus Bowser, Chris Wormley out of Michigan, and Tim Williams, of course, the edge rusher out of Alabama, who's used really kind of situationally there, but boy, he sure is explosive off the edge. What is the realistic expectations for those four players? It doesn't sound like any of the four are going to start the season as starters, but how quickly do you think those four guys will be able to get infused into that defense?
Well, Humphrey is another guy that has been dealing with a soft tissue injury in his leg, and he only played 9 snaps in the second exhibition game, and he has not been on the practice field this week. So he's nicked up a little bit. They absolutely love what they've seen from him. He's a big, rangy press cornerback, and I mean, they drafted at a position of strength. They have, you know, they have Brandon Carr and Jimmy Smith are their cornerbacks. Humphrey will push them. He's young, and he's the future there at that position. I don't know that it'll be this year, but he's coming on strong. Tyus Bowser, they really like. I think whenever Terrell Suggs hangs it up, that's probably your successor there on the right side, because he's agile and he can cover the pass, he can set the edge, so they really like him. And you know, again, a guy that probably will not start this year because Matt Judon looks like the one that's going to replace Elvis Dumervil on the left side. You know, yet another young guy that they have that's played pretty well. And so yeah, Tim Williams is the interesting other one. You know, just he fell to the third round because of off the field issues. You know, he had several run ins with the law, and just an explosive talent. They've lined him up against some undrafted free agent tackles and pass rush drills at training camp. And honestly, he just embarrassed them. I mean, you know, this is the sack master at Alabama, pretty talented kid. And he's coming on a little bit. He will definitely be on the field some this year, strictly in situational pass rushing. You know, just he'll be a one-trick pony this year. It'll be interesting to see what he develops into. So a little bit of an investment in the future, I think, in these draft picks. I don't know how much impact they'll have immediately, but they're definitely on their way to being puzzle pieces here.
All right, John, let's the $64,000 question. Is this an 8-8 team, or is this a team that's going to contend for a wild card spot?
I think it's a team that will contend. I think the defense is going to – you're going to see the Ravens playing. It'll be like back in the Matt Stover era, you know, when it was 9-6 on most Sundays. I think you're going to see the defense keep them in a lot of games. The offense is just a wild card, and really I base it on one thing. I think they'll – have enough. If Flacco has a bad back, then this team's in trouble. If Flacco doesn't have a bad back, I think you'll see him, and they'll put up enough points to win some games with that defense playing well. So I think they'll contend. My 2 cents. I think we're looking at one of the better defenses in the league, and I think that alone will enable them to contend.
If they don't make the playoffs this year, is anybody in trouble, John?
That's sort of the under the radar and over the radar in some people's minds questions here. And my inclination is no. You know, the owner and the head coach have a great relationship. But if they go 4-12, things will get interesting. That's a tough pill to swallow around here. So we'll see. I mean, you know, Harbaugh would have another – he would have to get another coaching job in 3 minutes. They have a good coach here if it's not. So everybody knows that. But, I guess my inclination is no. I think people, they will stick with it. But the fans' patience is starting to run a little bit thin. And so let me put it this way. It could get interesting.
Yeah, John, it's so similar in Pittsburgh. They've got a great coach who's been equally successful. And, you know, in those back-to-back 8-8 seasons, coming off that, they'd say, okay, you know, maybe, as you say, if you go 4-12, then you have to ask questions, but can't see them making a change. But people in Pittsburgh still ask that question. The way they ask it now is, if they go 8-8 this year and don't make the playoffs and then have a bad year, is Mike Tomlin going to get fired? I mean, it's always the way with the fans. But same thing in Pittsburgh. I've said all along for the last 3 or 4 years, I'll be shocked if Mike Tomlin is not the coach in 2020. I'll be shocked if John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin aren't both the coaches in Pittsburgh and Baltimore 5 years from now, because I think if that's the case, somebody made a bad decision.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I just don't know who they're going to get that would be better. The guy's won a Super Bowl. He's been to championship games. I mean, at some point you have to produce. There's no doubt. That's the issue. And Ozzie Newsome, is definitely safe here. I mean, it looks like he had a really strong draft this year and last year, and he is trying to put a winning team together. I mean, he would be the first to tell you, listen, you take your chances. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. So, it's a competitive league out there. So we'll see how it goes. But I think those guys are safe.
John, as always, man, appreciate it so much. We'll look forward to talking to you during the season. As we mentioned, you can follow John on Twitter at B. Moore Eisenberg. Check out his book on Cal Ripken and Lou Gehrig, The Streak. Thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, good stuff from John Eisenberg. And, of course, we'll talk to him during the season when the Steelers are getting ready for the Ravens. We'll get into the Bengals next week, the Browns, as we get ready for week one. Dave, you and I will get together Friday. We'll talk a little bit about this game with the Colts. Maybe I've got a couple things on my list of stuff to talk on the podcast that we haven't been able to get to yet that are bigger picture things, and maybe a little forecast for the season as we get ready then for the final game for Carolina. So we'll come back at you on Friday.
Yeah, David, are you in football shape yet?
You know, I think I need to get knocked around a little bit. I need a couple pops.
Yeah, before we got John off the line there, off the air there, I told him, boy, I hope he keeps some hamstrings in good shape and stays healthy there, because of what's going on in Baltimore. And I sure hope that we didn't catch anything via the Skype line here. But John's always a great guest, always enjoy having on, and I look forward to talking to him ahead of that Ravens game there. So sorry we ran a little bit long today, but wanted to make sure we got good time with Eisenberg there. Folks, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com and hit that donate button upper right navigational bar. And David, until Friday.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.